You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
There's that sound. The sound of the start of another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning, live on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thank you for joining us on this Saturday morning. Hope your summer's going well. July 4th weekend has come and gone, but hopefully you're still relaxing, listening to us, getting the latest in the fantasy sports world. We'll be talking baseball and football this morning with my co-host, George Kurtz. Excited to get through what was a lot of MLB action last night and a ton of runs scored. George, how are you doing this morning, buddy?
Doing well, Mike. You mentioned enjoying the summer so far. The midway point of the baseball season actually passed last Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, Mike, next week is one of the roughest weeks for me of the year. You know, no games to worry about. The All-Star game doesn't count. The Home Run Derby, all right. We got some extra pizzazz with Judge and Giancarlo Stanton, seeing how far they can hit the ball, seeing if they can knock over that thing in left center field. But other than that, it'll be a trying week.
Unless you're an ESPYs fan, which I think that occurs on Wednesday. So if you really want to tune in, no, that's typically not ESPYs. Your speed. Well, what's funny, George, is you and I have talked a lot about home runs over the course of this year. And last night, as the scroll was moving by, I just more and more players, I just was noticing, God, these guys are hitting tons of homers. But what was interesting is that one guy who is now vaulted right near the top of the major league lead in homers, I think is maybe somebody that is having an incredible season, but we haven't talked about as much. The irony is that as I was thinking about the show open this morning, this guy's name kept coming to me. And then Tony Cincotta tweeted something out about him, and I knew I was right. And it's George Springer. The guy had a monster game last night, 4-for-4, 4 runs scored, 5 RBIs. He hits 2 more homers, making that 26-27 on the season, George. And he's like in the lead for AL MVP. We're talking Aaron Judge for Triple Crown, but George Springer is right there with him, with the Astros, obviously the best team in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, Springer is certainly there for the MVP talk, having a great season, leading off most of the time, too, for Houston. Only as well the one stolen, I think, one stolen base, so that's a little disappointing for fantasy owners who thought at one point he might be minimum 20-20 guy. Looks like he's developed into more of a power guy than that way. He's not going to run as much, and the Astros don't need him to run as much. So I guess if you're negative Ned, you could go there, but George Springer's having a terrific season for Houston, and he's not the only hitter there. Altuve's having a big season. Correa's having a big season. Astros just look fantastic.
Yeah, it's crazy. On a team with, the way George Springer is playing, he's probably the third most lauded player, right, because of the potential of Correa and obviously the resume of Altuve. Springer was a guy coming into the season, as you said, we had really good expectations for, and he was a relatively high draft pick, but still, nobody expected this. So just an incredible season thus far for George Springer, hitting .307. He's got 27 homers on the season out of the leadoff spot, mostly out of the leadoff spot. So Charlie Morton throws last night, a good 6-inning outing. He picks up a win, and Aaron Sanchez was probably not ready to come back, George.
No, doesn't look like it. Not yet.
Yeah. Talk more about that game and others when we come back. We're here for the next 2 hours, the Roto Experts in the Morning. Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Join us. Mike Blewett and George Kurtz back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts to be on for the next 2 hours. After us is Joe Lisi and Rich Germanello. So that's our first time hearing them this season on a Saturday, or this year on a Saturday. So they'll be taking you all throughout the rest of the year with college football today. Those guys are great. Tons of knowledge. They get a lot of interviews with former players and give you some insight on all of the 130 FBS teams. After that, it's Weekend Fantasy Update. That'll be Joe Galina, Frank Stanfill, Mike Florio, and then the NASCAR, father and son NASCAR Fantasy Hour. I swear I'm going to get that name of that show right by the end of the day today, because I always screw it up. But in any event, Scott Engel will be on with Sean Engel a little bit later today. So just getting back to Springer real quick. George, by the way, if you had a vote right now, would you vote Judge or Springer? Because I think those are the two guys that have probably put themselves ahead of the pack. And by the way, I'm not stealing content from Tony Cincata, but that was his poll last night. And I thought it was interesting because I was literally thinking about that as he tweeted it out.
Yeah, I actually saw the poll as well. Actually, I listened to a little bit of Tony's fantasy news deck. Yeah. See, you got me jinxed now, Mike.
Sorry, buddy.
We are not being able to say things. So I'm blaming Mike Blewett for this.
Okay.
Fantasy news desk last night. I was reffing in the gun. There was a game that was canceled, so I tuned in from 9 to 10. Judge or Springer? I think it's tough. I think you can go either way here, and I wouldn't really blame anybody. Me being the Yankee fan, I'll go with Aaron Judge, only because I think he's I think him and Stanton are sort of, in some ways, doing what McGuire and Sosa did. Was it 99? That's helping with the publicity of the game, 98. Helping with the publicity of the game with all the home runs and the length of their home runs. So I think they've Judge become must-watch TV, right? Hasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a Yankee fan of late, he's the only reason to watch.
That is true. That's true. We'll get to them in a minute. Don't you worry how bad they've been, especially one particular bullpen pitcher. But Springer, 27 homers, 60 ribbies, 307, 614 slugging, and 992 OPS. As you said, he actually picked up a second stolen base, George. So are we doing okay?
But ooh!
He's
like twice as good.
Yeah. It is funny just to look at the strikeout totals, right? Even the best players in the league just strike out a ton. He's got 83 strikeouts already, and that probably pales in comparison to some of the other guys' strikeout totals we see. So I know you're happy. You were happy with Charlie Morton. I remember you writing him in a Who's Hot column. He obviously went on the DL. Now he comes back. He had, you know, a pretty decent outing last night. They scored a ton of runs, so there was no reason to keep him in there long term. But he did throw 95 pitches. Ultimately, your thoughts on Charlie Morton, if he's out there on some waiver wires, somebody that you'd look to pick up?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm picking up Charlie Morton. Now, Mike, I don't know if he's going to go pitch the next 80 games without suffering another injury. Yeah. His history tells us he probably will. He's never thrown more than 171 innings in a season, and he's probably not going to reach that this year. And let's also keep in mind here, with Morton, McCullers, who's struggling now some too, you know, the Astros can afford to play it safe. They have, what, a 30-game lead in the division, so they're not planning for anything other than October.
Yeah.
So they're not going to risk these. They don't need him to throw 120 pitches. They don't need him to go 9 innings, 8 innings, 7 innings. They don't need it. You know, the Astros are only really gearing their team up for October. And so they can afford to play it smart here. But, yes, to answer your question, if Morton's out there, I'm grabbing him. He's got more than a strikeout per inning. ERA's under 4. WHIP is higher than we'd like, but it's not horrendous. And it's in line with this past. 1.34 was 1.33 last year, 1.38 the year before. So fantasy-wise, he's someone I want. He's an SP 3-4 for me fantasy-wise.
Yeah, I guess my only concern was – and I actually picked up Morton. Then he got hurt. I had to drop him because I was just losing – I was losing ground on starts, so I just needed the roster spot. I actually have Steven Matz now, another issue. I'm going to tell you who I cut for him in a minute because you'll appreciate it. The only concern I have with Morton, and maybe I'm being a little too nitpicky because he has been good, the WHIP aside, as you said, it's a little higher than you would like, but he does not go far into games. He has not. He's only gone to the seventh inning twice this year. Does that concern you at all, or you figure he's pitching well enough? It's not that far off of the pace of what many other guys are throwing on a regular basis.
Yeah, I see where you're going with this. And sometimes you can't get wins if you don't go deep.
Yeah.
You know, you're leaving your games tied or even maybe behind, and the offense comes back late. I can see where that could be frustrating. And I have Morton in several leagues, so I know you're right because I've seen him happen to leave games in the sixth inning. You know, he pitches 5 1/3, the game is tied, and you know, you're not getting a W. It's frustrating. He does throw a lot of pitches. I mentioned the WHIP is high because he walks batters. Although he's only walked 20, he's walking pretty much over what? Almost 3 a game. So not great, not terrible. And this is a strange year, Mike. In so many leagues, as you know, I know, we don't have many DL slots. So when these guys get hurt, you got 6, 7, 8 guys on a DL. At one time, I had 13 guys on a DL. And so you got to release good players. And Morton is one of those guys. So I understand you had to get rid of him. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll see if he's actually available. I'd consider picking him up, but I don't know. I may ride out Steven Matz for as long as I can. I'm going to struggle with wins and Ks in that league just because I've fallen behind in some totals. But in any event, enough about my team. Good stuff on Charlie Morton, though. So moving on to the next game, a guy that I talked about a little bit. Look, he's a fantasy superstar. There's no reason to beat around the bush. But another guy who I listened to some of the MLB analysts last night talk about him because he's on such a team-friendly contract, and that's Paul Goldschmidt. So Goldschmidt goes 1-for-4 last night, another RBI, a nice win for Greinke last night. He goes to 11 wins on the season. For me personally and for many fantasy owners out there, I think people were happy to see Fernando Rodney get back on the horse and get a save after a really bad blown save a couple of nights ago against the Dodgers. So you get the save from Rodney, the win from Greinke, you get more production out of Paul Goldschmidt. And he's a guy, George, who just keeps killing it, and I don't think people realize how team-friendly his contract is.
Goldschmidt is one of the best players in the game. You're right. He's sort of maybe one of the best unknown players in the game. Doesn't get enough love.
I mean,
for whatever reason.
Yeah, like on Fantasy Sports Radio Network, obviously we know who he is. But, you know, in mass, I think it's important to highlight guys like this sometimes, right?
Sure. I mean, you want to call it, technically it's not West Coast, but out West bias, whatever they want to call, say. I mean, fantasy, as we all know, Goldschmidt, we all love Goldschmidt. He's a first-round pick each and every season. But I guess that in mass, for some reason, he doesn't get as much love as he should. But I'm not feeling all that bad for him. I think he'll be okay. He does everything for you. Hits for power. Hits. He steals bases. Hits for average. I mean, really, what else do you want from the guy?
Yeah, he's.
What else could you possibly ask for Goldschmidt?
It's unbelievable. The on-base percentage is a crusher every year, and he's only making 8.8 this year. He's 29 years old. His next year, age 30, he's making 11, and then age 31 season, 14.5. So it's crazy that this guy's going to get through a lot of his prime, and they have him at a pretty serious discount compared to some other sluggers.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who ended up taking a, I guess I would call it a security deal, where he wasn't worried about hitting Francie, maybe suffering a big injury where he doesn't collect at all. So he took a security deal. Not like he's ever going to be crying for cash. But, you know, that's the way it is, some of these guys. And if I'm Cole Goldschmidt, I probably would have done the same thing. I'm never going to spend all this $200, $300 million some of these guys are going to get anyway. So I might as well make sure I'm secure in my life rather than suffer that big knee injury or arm injury. You don't get the, and you're not the same player anymore.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to do a segment tomorrow, George, and we'll do it a little bit more formally.
Just one segment?
We'll do on about what I'm trying to set up. We'll do it a little bit more formally. But one guy we maybe should apologize. I'm going to do we'll do an all-star apologies tomorrow. And guy that's been really good when you and I totally admitted that he's one of the best pitchers in the game when he's right. But maybe we were a little worried about how he was last year and is he hurt and all and is he going to be hurt coming off of last year. And that's Zach Greinke. He moved to his 11th win last night, 2.86 ERA on the season. He only gives up 4 hits and a walk, 7 strikeouts for Greinke, who's been dominant.
All right, so you want to apologize to Mike Cardano, don't you?
Yes.
And that's where you're going with
more Zach Greinke than Cardano, but sure.
Yeah, great. Greinke's been fantastic. Yes, I guess with chalk up last year to, you know, goes to a new team, even though it was voluntarily. It wasn't like he was traded. He went there for Ains, and he had trouble making the adjustments to Arizona, even though it's strange because, you know, Dodgers played Arizona 18, 19 times a season, so he should have been used to it, but he struggled mightily there. He's figured it out this season. All right, 11-4, 2.86 ERA. His whip is 1. Striking out a ton of batters, more than 1 per inning. Not going to win the Cy Young this year. They're just between Scherzer and Kershaw. I don't see that happening again. But he's sort of living up to that contract, even though there's no way I would have given it to him. Not at 31 years of age. He's 33 now. So I thought that was a little silly there. But he's going to lead the Diamondbacks into the playoffs, right? Because they're going to get that first wild card spot, I would think. And, you know, I think Greinke, if he pitches that wild card game, probably wins that, then after that becomes anybody's ball game out west.
No doubt. So again, Goldschmidt hit his 20th homer last night. Brandon Drury has been way more than I ever anticipated when I drafted him, George. two for two last night, two more runs scored, getting on base constantly, hitting .287. Brandon Drury, a multiple position player, and he's a guy that's now in my lineup every night because he's been so productive, far more productive than even I anticipated.
Really, when you look at his overall numbers, I mean, they're solid. Average is a little bit of a plus. 8 home runs, 40 ribbies. Only stealing one base. I actually thought he might have done a little bit more damage.
Interesting. So, all right, we'll come back. We're going to talk about the Nats after this and what player I finally cut from my roster, George. The guy that we had expectations for, but I think you know who it is. Yeah, we'll come back after the break on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening, but if you want to hit us up on Twitter or give us a call, please do that. On Twitter, it's at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. Keep it simple, just our names. And if you want to give us a call, it's 844-843-6879. Music coming in from our producer, Pete Considori. Thank you for that, Pete. So, George, a guy that I teased during the break, and he was somebody that we had expectations for. You write about him nearly every week in the closer report, which we're going to talk about a little bit later this hour. And I waited and I waited and I waited, and he finally got the opportunity because Dusty Baker gave it to him, and then he was on the DL, and I had to cut Coda Glover, is what I'm saying. So Coda Glover is out. Steven Matz was in. Tell me a little bit about this Nats bullpen, if you can, before I get to the game, which was a crazy ending that I'll explain.
Yeah. That's your Nats bullpen.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a train wreck. Really, if they had an average bullpen, their lead might be double in the National League. That's how bad that bullpen's been. They're just it becomes like Nats have a 6-2 lead in the ninth. Let's see how close this bullpen can make it. 6-4, 6-5. Nothing safe. There's just nothing safe there. Coda Glover is the best they have. He's certainly not a lockdown close, but he's the best they have. But he doesn't look like he's all that close to returning it with the back injury. Now he's got inflammation in his rotator cuff.
Yeah.
I don't know when he's returned.
That's why I cut him.
Sean Kelly.
I saw the rotator cuff thing and I was done.
Sean Kelly has just started a throwing program. So he's, you would think, at least maybe the week after the All-Star break he can return. But really, does it matter? Not like his numbers were all that great either. We know they're going to make a trade. And we found out, maybe last week about this time that they actually, the GM did have a trade in place for Robertson during the offseason. But ownership nixed it, too much money. So that's interesting now. So maybe they're not going to get a top-flight closer. I can't see them going very far with that one. These games in the playoffs are going to be closed. This bullpen can't get it done. I think not only do they need a closer, I think they probably need one other reliever besides that. So it's going to be tough for Washington here, but this is where their priorities have to lie. And everything I'm hearing about the price for Robertson is that it's only gone up. It's not getting it's not getting any less.
Yeah, the irony of this conversation is that the bullpen actually was okay last night. Scherzer goes 7 2/3, gives up 4 runs. He threw 120 pitches and 10 strikeouts, only the one walk, but he doesn't factor into the decision. So what was really interesting about this game, and it was crazy, and it's something that we've talked about. There's a little bit of review here. So, George, it's bottom nine. It's bottom nine. The Braves have a 4-1 lead. And Matt Wieters is up for, is that right? Yeah, Matt Wieters is up for the Nationals. And they're down to their last strike. And Wieters, clearly in replays, goes through the zone as he checked his swing. They appealed to third on the check swing, and he said he didn't go. Any replay would tell you it wasn't even really that close. The Braves flipped out. Well, it got even. The Braves flipped out about the no strike call, and then it got worse because they then subsequently blew the 3-run lead and lost it in extras when Daniel Murphy walked it off. So I'm going to give you the platform. Should that be reviewable?
A couple of things about this game. First, the bullpen actually didn't help Scherzer. Scherzer left that game when he only gave 2 runs. There was runners on, I think, first and third when he left. The bullpen let both runs score.
Good point.
So if you're looking for a quality start, you probably still want to burn down the Nationals bullpen, as that was frustrating there. Dusty Baker did let Scherzer throw a ton of pitches. My guess is mainly because he's not going to start again probably until next Friday, Saturday, right after the All-Star break. So he can afford to let him do that there. No big worry there. Johnson for Atlanta did blow of a save. If I'm Atlanta, you better start looking to move him sooner rather than later. He's wilting a little bit here. And I think Atlanta does want to move him. He's not a lockdown closer by any means, just a closer for their team. But his ERA is now over 4.
That was
his
seventh blown save, yeah.
Right, yeah. You got to think about moving this guy. He's blowing a lot of these saves recently as well. So I think you want to move him ASAP. As for the check swing, first of all, the definition of what is and what isn't a check swing is always different. You know, is it he breaks his wrist? Your bat goes past home plate. The corner umpires can see the bottom of the bat. Then it's a strike. You know, I don't know if there's any correct way. So no, I don't think you can review it because I don't think there's any true way. It's sort of did you make an attempt to swing? And if you hit the ball, was it going to go up over the second baseman's head? I mean, there's just no clear definition of what is and what isn't a check swing here. So no, I think that's one play that probably shouldn't be reviewable. I don't think there's any perfect thing. The only thing I'm positive of is that the home plate umpire should never call it. That's the corner bases umpire. How can the home plate umpire call the pitch for a ball or a strike where it is, and then also see how far the bat went across home plate? And how many times do we see him call it and the bat wasn't close? So that's the only thing that I think there. It has to be the corner umpires. But that's one play, Mike. I just don't know if we're ever going to be able to get it perfect.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. It's a good way to put it. Clearly, the Braves would have liked that last night. And he clearly went through the zone. And then they blow the save. Johnson does have 19 saves on the season. But George brings up a really good point. The ERA is up there. That's 7 blown saves. It's obviously not the ratio that you would want. If the Braves had other options, they would probably consider using it. But they're 3 games under 500. I don't think we expect them to play out of their minds here in the second half. So he's an asset that can probably move for something. How valuable? What will they get back? I don't know, but more than what Jim Johnson's long-term value is, that's for sure. So Ryan Zimmerman, a couple of hits last night. Daniel Murphy with the walk-off, 2 hits, 2 RBIs last night. Bryce Harper, 1 for 5. Wieters really with that big hit and 2 RBIs there. So, as you said, Scherzer gets a little bit of a start wasted. Ari Dickey got a start completely wasted because he goes 7 innings and only gives up 1 run. So, that's the story of the game there. Moving on to the next game, we talked about this. We seem to talk about this team every week, and it probably feels like I'm piling on some, but tough. And that is because the Orioles were just brutal last night. They had a 6-0 lead and they blew it all. Kevin Gausman, George, again, terrible. One highlight in this game I saw this morning as I was kind of prepping for the show after watching a little bit last night, Byron Buxton scored from first on a single last night, first to home in 9.47 seconds. So first, give me your take on Gausman and the Orioles. Just there's nothing they can do now. They're just stuck with a really bad pitching staff and they're not going to go out and improve it dramatically, if at all.
No, like I said, I think you and I have beat this up every week. They're not. This is a team that has money that just didn't help the pitching staff. That's Angelos not wanting to go out there and spend. It's a shame because the offense is there. We know they can hit. All right, I mean they got some injuries now, but Chris Davis will hopefully be back after the All-Star break. Machado hasn't had the big year we were expecting, but really the offense is there. The pitching is not. It's not even close. You mentioned Gausman. He was just looking like he was just starting to turn it around, Mike. He had two, three quality outings in a row. He only had 3 earned runs in his last 3 outings. Looking good, right? Minnesota, all right, good too. I understand they're playing well, but they're not an offensive powerhouse. And to blow us the 6-run lead, I mean, that's disappointing. That's just disappointing. His overall numbers, you can't start a 5.85, 1.76 whip. My God. A lot of walks. You know, he's walking almost a batter every other inning. Yeah, you can't have that. You just can't have that. As Joe Girardi would say, it's not what you want.
He is a way of phrasing it, right? But so Gausman, they blow the 6-run lead. Manny Machado, to highlight what George said, positive last night, actually. He goes 4 for 5, 2 homers, 4 RBIs, 2 runs scored, so a big night for Machado. I guess a discouraging piece of news is that Zach Britton has kind of a rough outing last night. He doesn't take the loss or blown save or anything, but it was a 1-run game when he came in there. He only throws the 1 inning, bottom of the 8th, and he gave up 2 earned runs. So, look, it was a relatively high leverage situation because it was a 1-run game, but the game wasn't in his hands, right? So you obviously, I'm fine with the guy kind of working out the kinks as he comes back, but you want it to be sharper as we get here in here in the rest of the season. And, you know, based on the starting pitching, how many opportunities is it going to have versus some other closers, as great as Britton is?
That's just the problem. What are you going to do? The Orioles are going to win some games. The Orioles are really the late 80s Yankees. You know, they're going to win a lot of 8-6 games, 8-7 games. Those are the kind of games they're going to play. Because the pitching staff, I mean, even Bundy's showing signs of wearing down. He's been showing those signs for a while now. We know Miley's a softball pitcher. You trust Jimenez? No thank you there. And whoever I left out, Tillman, he's terrible too. They don't have a pitcher they can rely on right now. Really, they have a whole bunch of SP4s and 5s. You know, this is not going to get it done. Like I said, lots of high-scoring games here.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, there were so many runs scored last night. Kenis Vargas for the Twins, 3-for-4, 2 RBIs. We had Kepler, 2-for-4 with 2 runs scored. And I saw the Buxton thing. It was crazy. He has a hit in an RBI last night, but he goes first to home in 9.47 seconds. That was like the StatCast stat of the day on MLB.com. But it was impressive because it was a base hit up the middle. It wasn't something deep into the gap. It was a straight-up standard issued textbook single, and he scored from first on it.
Yeah, well, that's what Buxton, we know he can run, right? He's the hitting tool, just not there yet. He's hitting a little better of late, but still, I don't know if it's ever going to be there, but he can run. And the Orioles, let's just say they've had some issues as far as runners on the base paths this week. You see those plays in Milwaukee,
yeah,
where they couldn't get guys at rundowns. Maybe Buck ought to work on the fundamentals with this team.
Yeah, I'm sure he's pulling what's left of his hair out regarding this stuff. So we'll talk a little bit about the Yankees when we come back. Aaron Judge hit his 30th home run. Tyler Clippard, not so good last night, George.
Tyler Clippard. Oh, we only got a minute. Oh, boy. You know, I'm reffing last night, so I watched this game on delay. I recorded it, watched it when I get home. Yeah, you see Clippard pitch the sixth inning, and he gets through it. You know, you're like, all right, you know, you survived. And then Girardi lets him pitch the seventh, and I'm like, oh, no, it's all over. I even sent out a tweet, something like, you know, Girardi having Clippard go 2 innings seems to be like wishful thinking, isn't it? So no shock what happened there. It's the Yankees bullpen is a complete disaster right now.
Yeah, shocking to think that, considering where we were in April. We'll come back and talk more about the Yankees and a few other games around MLB. It's Mike and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're the Roto Experts. We'll be back. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Hopefully you're listening to us live on the app. If not, please download that. Download the Fantasy Sports Radio app in the iTunes Store on Google Play. Listen for free anytime, anywhere. You can hear us here every Saturday and Sunday morning right up through the football season, 8 to 10 on the Roto Experts. Roto Experts in the morning on every day on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. So please listen in. Make sure you download the app for free right now and listen for free in the iTunes Store on Google Play and take the experts with you. So, George, moving back to the Yankees, Tyler Clippard, his last 10 games, he has an ERA of 16.2. What was interesting about, I mean, as you said, he got through the one inning, and you're like, all right, maybe we get a little something here, but, you know, starts walking the ballpark, and he gives up a grand slam to Aguiar, who had sized him up, had been sizing up Yankees pitching all night. He actually has a big night. I think he had 7 ribbies when the night was done. Yes, he did. 3-for-4, 2 runs scored, and the 7 ribbies. He had the 2 homers, including the grand slam. So, as you said, the bullpen is a mess. I don't even know what you do with somebody like Clippard at this point, who's going through such a rough stretch. They're obviously hoping that the other guys, the more established guys, work it out. But you feel like they need to make moves here or move some guys around to different roles in order to get Clippard out of there. I mean, he's not the type of guy that you would think they would DFA, but he's been so bad. How do they get this bullpen right? Or is it just a matter of guys pitching themselves back into it?
Yeah, it's once again, it's not what you want. No one's pitching well in the bullpen. That's outside maybe Adam Warren. You want to go Adam Warren? He certainly has been decent for the Yankees. Betances is a mess. Chapman's really been off all season long, so they have to admit the bullpen is really. The Yankees are 6-17 the last 23 games. The bullpen's a big part of why they're not pitching well. Like I said, Betances is a mess. Clippard mess. Chad Green's been solid. Jason Shreve's. You never know what you're going to get with him.
That's crazy.
That's not good. And the bullpen, I believe, has blown 7 wins. So that's not good. And even yesterday, you know, you could question why what Girardi did with Jordan Montgomery as well. Montgomery pitches 4 innings. The rain delay comes, lasts about an hour, give or take. And then he lets Montgomery come in. You know, first 2 out of the first 3 batters get on, he takes Montgomery out. Well, if you were going to do that, then why did you start him in the first place? You know, strange how, like I said, just strange how Girardi handled that whole bullpen situation last night. His comments after the game where he went with Clippard for a second inning because he didn't want to go to Sessa or Warren. Okay, didn't you have – or Chad Green and Warren. Didn't you have Thursday off? Why weren't those guys available? You know, why were you going with Clippard for 2 innings? A guy who's been horrendous for about a month now, yet you want to throw him in there a second inning? I mean, really, I just throw him a dice around and see what happens here? It made very little sense how Girardi did last night's game. And the Yankees aren't playing well. The Brewers made, what, 5 errors in the game? Brewers had more errors than the Yankees had hits. Sure. It's become, you know, how far can Aaron Judge hit the ball? That's Yankee baseball right now. You know, they're not doing anything else. I understand they have a truckload of injuries. You know, Hicks is out, which is forcing guys like Clint Frazier to play. Ellsbury's been a disaster, as usual. Holiday's out. So Romine's now playing much more off the behind the plate with Sanchez DHing. You know, and Castro's out. So now we're seeing Tyler Wade. That's a lot of at-bats the Yankees are missing. They will get healthy after the break with at least two of the three returning. But it's amazing how his team is just falling apart. You know, the Mets blame their season for injuries. Listen, the Yankees are doing the same thing.
Yeah. As George stated, how far can Judge hit it? Well, pretty darn far. Hits another home run last night. His 30th breaks the Yankees rookie record. It's not even the All-Star game yet. So you can't add enough superlatives to the season that he's having. Hopefully he keeps it going. He's hitting .330. He's got 30 homers. His OPS is 1.149. So clearly I can't say enough good things about him as much as he strikes out. So G-Mon Choi starts the Yankee first base rotation in a positive upward trajectory, maybe, George. His first 2 games as a Yankee, he's hit homers.
Yeah, first base has been a vast wasteland for the Yankees. They've now DFA'd Chris Carter twice. Mm-hmm. I was shocked they brought him back. He was terrible. You bring him back, and then you pretty much release him if you realize he can't hit. And he can't field either. He can't catch balls coming across
the diamond.
He can't
catch pickoff throws.
It's strange. It's just strange. Choi, listen, he's looked good. You know, he doesn't look good. He probably used a little diet there, but he looks good as far as hitting the ball.
Yeah, he's a throwback. He's like a Greg Luzinski body type.
Oh, let's not quite go there. Greg Luzinski was a big man. We're showing our age here. Greg Luzinski played in the 70s for the Phillies. This was a big man who did not run at all. Speaking of another player who didn't run yesterday, we'll get to that later. But Choi's looked good hitting some long home runs. And he's giving the Yankees another option. But if you watch Choi last night, he cannot hit a left-hander to save his life. When Hader came in there for Milwaukee, Choi was lost. I mean, he's waving at pitches like he's waving at the president from 200 yards away. Yeah, it didn't look good at all. But listen, he's better than Carter. Bird, I think Bird's done for the year. I don't think we're going to see him until next year. And the Yankee brass doing their great job. And this sounds like Randy Levine to me, once again, just not putting his name behind it, criticizing a player for injuries again. Yep. Does anybody think Bird is really milking this, that he doesn't want to be out there? Didn't he play all of 2015 or most of it with a shoulder injury?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd ease up on Bird's bit. I understand the frustration. He didn't play last year because of the shoulder surgery. And now this year looks like a bust as well. I get the frustration, especially after a big spring training. But I have a hard time believing that he's milking this and he's healthy and doesn't want to play.
I mean, with the spring that he had and the job that he was given, his career effectively is on the line. That is not the type of situation where a guy milks it because he's trying to hang on to a gig. He had an opportunity to go out there and become the Yankees' first baseman for the relatively near future, or relatively long future if he played well, right? I mean, Greg Bird was going to be kind of locked in there to some extent. They're talking about exploratory surgery now just to figure out what it is that's wrong. So it's frustrating, but as you said, George, it's a wash. If you drafted him like like I did. I'm sure you cut him long ago. If you're in a really deep league, Greg Bird isn't going to be a fantasy asset this year.
You're talking right now, best case scenario is he plays August 1st, right? I mean, even if tomorrow they figure out what's wrong with him. Right, he's at least 3 weeks away. He's not even on a rehab assignment. He's not doing any baseball activities right now. My guess is they'll eventually have to do the exploratory surgery, and they'll find something. Oh, there's a tear here, or something's blockage here, whatever it might be. It's not showing up on an MRI. It's strange, no doubt. I think it's very strange. But that being said, I think the injury is legit.
Yeah, you talked about Josh Hader last night. He looked nasty when he was in there. He pitched three innings. He had seven strikeouts. He only gives up the one run, but he looked tremendous when he was in there. You're right, he made Choi look foolish, but he made a bunch of guys look foolish last night.
Well, he didn't make Judge look foolish. That was the guy Judge hit the home run off of. But actually, the Yankees, they only had four hits last night. Brewers made five errors, Mike. Five errors. Mm-hmm. And the Yankees couldn't take advantage of it. I mean, that's five. That's almost two extra innings of you got, and you couldn't take advantage of it. And the Yankee offense is in trouble right now. They've become literally, how far can Judge hit the ball? You know, and listen, that's great. You know, to watch Judge, he's fun to watch, must-watch TV, but they're not scoring any runs otherwise. And, hey, you know, if Judge and Sanchez want to win the home run derby, maybe they should invite Tyler Clippard to be their pitcher.
That's a great point. Anyway, the start of this game last night, we've buried the lead. I did mention it earlier, but Jesus Aguiar drove in seven of the nine runs that the Brewers had last night. He's hitting .299, George, nine homers, 34 RBIs, and an OPS of .924. So despite the fact that he has not played anywhere near a full season, he's been really good in his 164 at-bats.
I guess it is. Everything's a small sample size in baseball, but so far, so good, yeah. I mean, it's 164. It's, at this point in the season, though, we have to go with what we go with, right? Mm-hmm. If we believe, we run with it. We're not in April anymore. Yeah, you know, we're halfway through here, so we have to assume what's happening is going to continue to happen the rest of the season.
Yeah. So beyond that, just looking at some other games last night, Cole Hamels. Do you see that guy's stash? I was looking at that last night. First of all, he pitched well, but his stash is unbelievable. He's got like that's like a professional, well-groomed 70s, 80s mustache that he's got going on. I hadn't seen it until last night. He picks up the win in the 10-0 win for the Rangers.
Now, I did not see the stash, Mike. So are we talking porn star here or you know, state trooper? what are we talking about?
Yeah, like the movie Super Troopers. Like, it's one of those. Like a real tight cop's mustache is what he's got going on. He's in Texas, so he blends in nicely. You could probably say porn star. You could probably, it's not quite a push broom Ned Flanders, but it's a real tight, like, Texas state trooper kind of stash.
That throws a Simpsons reference in there. Ned Flanders. One thing about Hamels, his first start off the DL, he wasn't very good. Now he's back-to-back very good start since, so it looks like he's back on track. Good to see for Texas, right, because they're sort of back in this wild card hunt here. I wonder if they'll make an addition to that pitching staff. They were missing. 2 weeks ago, we were talking about Darvish possibly being traded for them to rebuild for next year. Now they might be making additions. Them, KC, teams that were out of it, now back in it. So good to see that. Hamels must back to being a must-start. I understand it's the Los Angeles Angels, a team that doesn't have the greatest offense on the planet, especially without Mike Trout. But still, no earned runs, three hits, and 7 2/3. I think I'll take that.
Yeah, Ricky Nolasco got bombed by Texas last night. He's 4-10 on the season, gave up 8 earned in 1 2/3. That's brutal. But Mazzara, 2-for-3, 3 RBIs. He hits. He hit a homer. His 12th of the year. Ruffnet Odor, George.
Of course he did.
Despite the 220. Yeah, no more Mazzara, of course. Ruffnet Odor, his 17th homer. He's only hitting .222, but at least the power is coming with it, George, as it is for many players.
Yeah, so you're getting something from Odor. With the power we expected, we didn't expect it to have a .220 batting average, and that batting average has come up. It was a pretty even lower, so he is starting to turn it around this season. And the reason I made the comment about Mazzara is, guess where Mazzara was this week?
Where's that?
On my Who's Not list, so thank you very much, Nomar.
There you go. You teased something before about a guy that didn't run. We'll talk about it when we come back to close out the baseball hour before
see
we turn
gets
to football. Mike and George back after the break on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. back to close out the baseball hour. We'll talk some more football. Baseball comes up in the second hour. I'm not going to beat anybody up over it, but, you know, I want to talk some football. It's July. Training camp's just like 2 weeks away, so we're going to talk some football, fantasy style. So, George, you teased something about somebody that didn't run. I missed the reference, so who was it that didn't run? Was it somebody in the Yankees game that screwed up? Because I was in and out. I was watching a bunch of games. Yeah.
It wasn't really a screw-up. It was just Nelson Cruz had a home run in the Seattle game last night.
Uh-huh.
And he did a David Ortiz special around the bases. I mean, I thought coming around third base that he might need an ambulance. Because I don't know if he was dying or if he – I don't know what it was. I don't know if something happened earlier in the game where he was just rubbing it into people, but it was a slow trot. I know he's a little banged up. Maybe that has something to do with it as well. But I would not be surprised this weekend if he gets a little message sent, because it just looked – it looks strange, Mike, how long it took him to get around the bases.
Maybe something did happen, but who knows? You know, I mean, it's the A's. It's a divisional rival, but I don't know what could have happened there. Who did he hit it off of? Let's see. He hit it off of Hendricks in the eighth inning. I mean, I don't know. It's interesting. I had missed that, so good highlight there. But in any event, I wanted to get to you quickly on the closers. We talked a little bit about the return of Zach Britton. You're just hoping he's working out the kinks. We talked about the Nationals and what a disaster that is. But anything else out there that we need to highlight? The Angels seems like there's a constant rotation, and Bud Norris you wrote about a little bit earlier this week.
Yeah, you talk about the closer report with the Angels. They're all over the place. But I think it's Bud Norris. I think he did such a good job earlier after Bedrosian got hurt. I think they're going to keep him in the role. Socha has never trusted Bedrosian. You know, for whatever reason, even when Bedrosian was healthy, he never trusted him. So I think that's just where we are with that now. So I think that's what's going to stick there. It's going to be Norris. He's the guy you want there. Rodney, you mentioned earlier, he's been rough at closer, but there's no one else there in Arizona. His ERA is north of 5. It's not good. He did blow a 3-run save to the Dodgers the other night. Not good, not what you want, but he's the guy. Britton's back for Baltimore. So once again, you can let – I think you should have wanted to keep Brad Brock until Britton is – has proven he's healthy, but at this point, if you need somebody else for next week, I have no problem with moving on from him. You got to do what you got to do there. Cody Allen and Andrew Miller in Cleveland, I think it's still Allen's job. I know they've been mixing it up a little bit, but since Miller's on record as saying it, hey, I'll pitch in any situation, I think Allen will be the closer there. With Miller pitching 7th inning, 8th inning, depending on what role he's needed in. I expect Justin Wilson to be traded out of Detroit, and I don't think he'll be a closer for his new team there. So that's something to keep in mind. I no longer expect Kelvin Herrera to be dealt, right? El Royals are going to add. They're going to go for it again. So good for them. Good to see a small market team go for it. I wonder if A.J. Ramos will be dealt, which could mean Kyle Barraclough, even though he hasn't been very good this season. But I think Barraclough is still your next in line there. So maybe if you need a speculative save guy, you might want to claim him. But I wouldn't be in any rush to do so there. Like I said, just not all that good. Addison Reed should be traded by the Mets eventually. Juris Familia could be back once again. Early August, somewhere around there. He's about to begin a throwing program if he hasn't already. So that's a good sign for there. St. Louis is playing games there with Seung Hwang Oh and Trevor Rosenthal pretty much splitting the role. Neither one pitching all that well. If I had to hedge a bet, it would go towards Oh. Dyson should remain the closer for San Fran for at least the next couple of weeks. And he's pitching well. He's figured it out. What he couldn't figure out in Texas, he's done in San Fran. So a solid closer for you there. Texas is a mess. It's really whoever pitches well there. Bush, Leclerc, Frieri, any of these guys could get a shot there. And as we all talk, Washington is still a complete dumpster fire.
If you were me, would you dump Brad Brock for Sam Dyson right now if I need some saves?
If you need saves, yes, I would. Dyson will have the job longer.
Okay. Good stuff to close out the hour. We're coming back. We're talking football. It's July. So that means it's football season in the fantasy sports world. Mike and George back after this.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Back for hour number two on the Roto Experts in the Morning, live from Studio 34 in Midtown Manhattan, Rockin' Riley's. restaurant. That's where we're located, in the shadow of Madison Square Garden. So thank you for joining us this morning. So, George, it's football season. I've been listening to the network, obviously, in the days when I'm not here, and more football content has flowed in. We still, unlike other places, will continue to talk baseball as long as we need to get you through your playoff push and whatever else. And sort of the end of September, when rosters expand, we'll still be talking baseball, even though football is going to be an overwhelming part of what we do. We're not going to turn off the faucet on baseball just yet. So, that being said, you're getting excited. There's a little bit of a lull here, but I'm getting tons of NFL news every day. I know we're pouring through it, despite the fact that training camp hasn't even started yet.
Am I getting excited? I don't know if I'm saying I'm getting excited. We've still got a long ways to go here, and I do enjoy my baseball season.
You're pacing yourself.
I am pacing myself. And that being said, I do have two drafts starting on Monday, so looking forward to that. I think actually we have a mock draft that I don't know why it hasn't started already. I think you're in that, but I'm not 100% sure.
I am, and I don't know why it hasn't started either. But it starts Monday. We got Scott Fishbowl starts Monday. That's slow draft too, right, Scott Fishbowl?
Scott Fishbowl, slow draft, and you and I have the Dynasty League starts Monday as well.
So that's right. I'm in all three.
Now that start Monday.
I'm in all three. Yeah, thankfully, slow drafts are, look, here's the reality. George, I like a draft party. Like
they're painful.
I like a draft party, but the amount of drafts that we do and the amount of stuff we have to do, for better or for worse, slow drafts have become music to my ears because I can kind of take my time with it and just do it as it goes. Maybe it takes out some of the juice of a live draft, but we're going to have those too. I just need to be drafts to be late at night after my kids are in bed, or I need them to be slow drafts. It just helps me sort things out. So taking a full Saturday, taking a full Sunday to do drafts, kind of not in the cards for me anymore, as much fun as it is.
Oh, no, I much prefer a nice live draft. That's my favorite thing by far. I love getting together with my friends, family from my home leagues, for most of the industry leagues. That's done online. But I prefer a nice – I look forward to it. That's it. You get to spend the day with your friends, your buddies, have some pizza, some chips, and just, BSing the whole time. Love those drafts. But you know, the slow drafts are fine. I don't mind. But when you get somebody who constantly takes the whole amount each and every time, I just want to beat my head against the wall.
Yeah, it's problematic.
Or beat his head against the wall.
Yeah, it's problematic. But the one draft that I had that does a draft,
make a pick
that does a draft party every year decided to go online this year. His schedule and everybody else's schedules aren't going to line up. So I was going to clear a day actually to do it finally. And it's not going to work out. So we're going to talk about some draft news. Talk about Le'Veon Bell. Are they going to give him a long-term deal? I don't know about that. So we'll see. Talk Steelers, talk whatever you want. But I got some things lined up. We're talking football after the break. Mike and George are back. We're going to talk some football. We're going to talk running backs. George did a running back rundown for the Roto Experts exclusive Edge package. I'm going to touch on that a little bit, but I saw an article on ESPN that I thought was interesting as well to talk about. George, before we do that, we're going to do a mini segment called Let's Fix My Baseball Team, and you're going to help me with it. I want to pick up Charlie Morton right now, and I can cut one of these three guys, Betances, Brock, or Cam Bedrosian. Which one do I cut?
I'm going to keep Bedrosian because I think there's a chance he might get some saves for you. Hey, I think you're crazy to have all three, by the way. I think I would drop two of these guys and find some of them starter.
I'm going to. I have Tanaka and Matz on my bench. I have a bunch of starters. I'm just trying to add another one right now. Ultimately, I'm going to have to find somebody that can get me saves again. It's probably my fault just being lax really in the last week or two in not doing this. I wanted to hold on to Brock because I wanted to see how Britton kind of re-entered this, you know, this role. It's been a bumpy start, but I don't lack confidence in Britton long term. I just was keeping Brock around just to make it a softer landing. So you'd keep Bedrosian, keep Betances, cut Brock right now. That's what you're telling me.
No, I think I would I'd cut by Betances because he's the guy who's, if you need saves, he's the guy who's least likely to get them out of all the guys you mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, Brock, I think you do want to hold on to just in case. We've seen this before with Britton, right? He came back and then all of a sudden had to go out again. So I think you want to make sure of that. I think Betances will figure it out, by the way. This is not because of his injury. It's just because of what you need. You want saves. I just think Brock has a better chance, even though I don't think he gets them. But I think he has a better chance right now than Betances. And let's face it, if you drop Betances, it's not like anybody else is going to rush out to claim him right now.
Yeah, I agree. So that it was just done. Thank you for fixing my team, George. So appreciate it. So it's a nice little mini segment. We should do it every day. I'll just call it every day, fix my baseball team. So, you know, you did a lot of this work during the season, and we touched on it last Sunday, but I don't think we got nearly through as much as we can do. And frankly, ESPN kind of copied your article because they were talking about the kind of the depth at running back and these crowded running back situations. So they talk about the Bengals, which we talked about last week, and I don't think we got to the Broncos last week as much as we would have liked, because in your estimation, while they have good depth, or they have depth, you're not sure about the quality of the depth from a fantasy standpoint. So I've heard a lot of talk, particularly out of Corey Parson, the fantasy executive, who you can hear here on this network every morning, Monday through Friday on Road Experts in the Morning, as well as now Fantasy Football Frenzy, which is a new show or a newly slotted show. But he talks a lot about Devontae Booker, especially where you can get him versus somebody like C.J. Anderson. So how do you think this plays out? Beyond those two, it's Jamaal Charles and Juwan Thompson, but I think we know that Anderson and Booker are really going to be the guys competing for the fantasy points here, correct?
There's so much going on here for me in Denver. I mean, first, Mike, I need to know who's the quarterback. I mean, fantasy-wise, I'm hoping it's Trevor Siemian. I think he'll force the defense to really back off the line of scrimmage a little bit. All right, if it's Paxton Lynch, then I think we could have some issues here as far as, you know, then I think he's going to throw the ball to the secondary. He's going to play it safe, so the safeties play a part on the line of scrimmage. So I think that could be an issue there. They did. I don't want to say they fixed, but they certainly made some moves to improve the offensive line to where I think it's at least average now, maybe even a tick above average. But that's something you can speak to with the additions they made via the draft and free agency, getting Ronald Leary from the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get to the running backs themselves. Now we're not talking superstars here. There's no Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, Ezekiel Elliott here. There's not. So you have some issues there. You know, I don't mind C.J. Anderson, but I don't trust him. Charles, we have some doubts if he'll even make the team, but if he does, he's going to have to get his touches, although he certainly won't be anywhere near a three-down back. And we've seen Booker and Thompson, for that matter, take away touches from Anderson in the past. So it's sort of a mess here, a lot of moving parts there. I have C.J. Anderson as no better than a low-end RB2.
So C.J. Anderson, low-end RB2, and your thoughts on... I mean, Corey has come right out and said that Booker's the guy you want. Booker's going to take the job. I assume you are much more tempered on that thought process.
Sure. I think the problem is this. Corey may be right, but even C.J. Anderson, if he starts, what is he, a 60-40 starter where Booker gets 40% of the touches? And if Jamaal Charles happens to make this team, well, that just makes it even more of a mess. Now the pass catches go to Charles. He'll be the third down back. You know, it's just it's not a situation where I don't want to have to draft any of these guys, you know, especially on Monday when we're drafting already early, when we don't know anything yet about how this is going to filter out here. But since I'd have to, I'd like to avoid this. And so far in the drafts I've done, I have been able to avoid it. So, but if I had to take a chance, I'm going to go opposite of Corey. You know, I'm going to go with C.J. Anderson over Booker, but I don't trust either one.
Yeah, so I'll give you a little sense of what I wrote on the offensive line. So center Matt Paradis was really there. He basically just missed all pro status, according to Pro Football Focus. He, unfortunately for him, he's had double hip surgery. That being said, they expect him to be back and healthy for this season, and probably by training camp. We'll see. If he starts off slow in training camp, you know why. He's had double hip surgery. So inexperience at QB was obviously a big issue for them last year. 3.6 yards per carry, an adjusted sack rate that ranked 27th in the NFL. But to your point, George, they have made improvements. They signed Ronald Leary from the Cowboys, 4 years, $36 million, and they drafted the one guy that people – expect out of this year's draft to potentially be a long-term left tackle, and that's Garrett Bowles out of Utah. There are some question marks. He's a little bit older than some rookies, but that being said, Bowles is a guy that they added. So they had some issues at guard over the course of the last year, but they've made three acquisitions this offseason to help their depth, and they could come out of there with two starters because left tackle isn't settled, and it could be Bowles by year's end. You don't want a rookie there, but you draft him in the first round. He's got a shot to be there. So I think you raised some good points. I think they have changed that line dramatically, and I think it will help. I do wonder. I listened to Jeff Darlington from ESPN yesterday say that this quarterback battle is the one true battle out there for the NFL training camp season. This is a straight up battle. Whoever plays better is going to get this job. So if for those that are leaning Simeon, you may be right, but it's a little bit more of a guess because they're going to battle it out starting in a couple of weeks. They're going to battle it out for a month until somebody is named quarterback by Joseph or McCoy or whoever gets the call. So I wonder if I agree with you on the quarterback situation. I don't know that it's better if Simeon's in there. I think Lynch, obviously, they expect has more potential based on where everybody was slotted and drafted. You got to earn it now. But I think Lynch might be better for the long-term health. Granted, he's got to play better, right? This is not rocket science. He's just got to play better than Simeon. But I just wonder if he could push the ball down the field a little bit more and create more points for this offense, which they weren't able to do when Simeon was the primary starter last year.
Yeah, I think what they've said already that the winner, and I don't know how true this is. We've seen this, what coaches say and what they do are two different things. But they say whichever one makes the best decisions during training camp will win the job. I would think Simeon comes in with a slight advantage having played last season. But Paxton Lynch, they traded up to get him first round. You got to think. You know, they want to see what they have here. And if, will it be him? My problem is this for the Broncos. If you sign Lynch and he gets off to a slow start and you start the season, I don't know, 1-3, your season could be over in that division. You'll be chasing the Raiders, Chiefs, and even the Chargers should be a decent squad all season long. So I think that plays into this as well. Long term, yes, I think they're better off with Lynch. But in the short term, to win this season, I still think it might be Simeon. Either way, fantasy-wise, I'm not touching either player. You know, unless you're playing in a two-quarterback or a super flex league, which I would prefer, I'm not touching either one there. And to be a little self-promotion there, I am actually, for Benny Ricciardi's book, my chapter is on why you should be playing in a Superflex league.
Very nice. I can't wait to read it because I fully support that now. I would say a couple of years ago, I wasn't necessarily on board, but now it's gotten to the point where it's just a little bit too easy, frankly, to play in a one QB league. And this it eliminates strategy, certainly drafting strategy, and frankly, over the course of the season, some strategy as well, because obviously, George, in experts leagues, we've gotten to the point where we're not even really holding on to a second quarterback to roster because there's actually guys that you can stream that are typically out there in experts leagues, correct?
Absolutely. One quarterback league just bore me. I mean, when the strategy is easily, wait till round 9, wait till round 10. You know, in the drafts I've done, I've been able to get, you know, my Mariota round 11, Cousins round 12. That's a joke. You can wait that long to get a top 10 quarterback. It makes it too easy. Let's add more strategy to your league. There are plenty of quarterbacks out there. Go to a super flex. Even if your quarterbacks get hurt, you can still throw a wide receiver or running back in there, or even a tight end, another deep position in that position later on this season. So you'll be fine. Two quarterback league. Super flex. It's the way you should go.
We're going to talk more about
the running backs. Get rid of the kicker too.
Oh, in my one of my home leagues, we're coming up with rule changes right now, and one of the major ones that a bunch of people already threw their hat in the ring on was getting rid of the kickers, finally. And I actually think it'll happen.
It
seems like there's some support there.
And get rid of the defense. Go IDP.
Well, that too. But it is more complex. I understand why people want to keep it simple
is.
There.
It is.
Kickers, just add a different flex. It's more fun that way.
Absolutely.
We're going to talk, when we come back, George is going to talk about why he doesn't like the Chiefs running back core. I don't quite understand it, but I'll get an answer after the break. Mike and George on the Roto Experts. What is this deal? What is this? Pete Considore coming in. This is like a 70s theme music. It could be the open to like Mary Tyler Moore, George. This is kind of what this is.
Never watched that show.
I don't know that I did much either, but it's kind of what it sounded like. You know, it had like a little 70s vibe.
Kind of funny you should mention 70s. I've been watching Starsky and Hutch all week.
Yeah, like that could have been a Starsky and Hutch, like as the end credits roll. It could have been that kind of deal. What, how's that show hold up?
I mean, it's not bad, but one thing you see, so many filming mistakes. You know, we all know the, you know, Starsky had that Gran Torino, but in one episode, they actually blow the car up, yeah. And it's so obviously that it's not a Ford Gran Torino they're blowing up.
Oh,
I mean, it's one of those. You know, I don't know what kind of car it is, but I mean, how stupid do you think we were back then? I mean, we couldn't tell one car from another.
Yeah,
I mean, just because you paint it red and put a stripe on it.
Yeah, that's. I guess that's when that really ramped up, right? It was the 70s. They really just started blowing cars up, and it went right from Starsky and Hutch in the 70s into the A-Team in the 80s, and then it just became a car-blowing up extravaganza, a bonanza, if you will. So I'm
just
with
blow
you.
Blow something up.
Yeah, they can't. Yeah, they didn't have the editing skills that they do now or the technology, so I think they did. They worked with what they had,
cheap,
right?
Cheap.
Shoestring budget, right. We're talking about a little bit about the ESPN article that highlights trying to mine running back depth, but frankly, it mirrored George's article that he wrote about in the. It's called the Running Back Rundown in the exclusive Edge package, which you can get on rotoexperts.com right now. The NFL exclusive Edge draft package is available. Enter code. I don't know which promotional code is currently active. We did a 40 for 4 for July 4th. Maybe free radio works, but in any event, check in there. Hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio or at Mike Blewett or at George Kurtz if you have any questions. But I can assure you there's tons of good stuff in there. I wrote a lot about offensive lines. George wrote about running backs, and you did new places, new faces, right? So free agents that moved around, you did that. Got tons of rankings in there from George and Jake Seeley and Scott Engel and many others. So tons of expert analysis from a lot of different angles, good stuff. And I'm going to be breaking down articles just about each and every show that we do. I think it's important to highlight the different types of content that you can get in there. So please go and get yourself a Roto Experts exclusive Edge Draft package now. So that being said, George, we'll go back to your article. And in your rankings, you're talking about really the depth of the position. It's easy to go rankings 1 through 12 and talk about those guys, but you really talked about the sets of running back as a whole. So, you, for example, at the top of the list, you have Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman because they're both effectively fantasy starters. In Dallas, you have Ezekiel Elliott, Darren McFadden, and Alfred Morris. That's second because if Zeke goes down, and frankly, if he's suspended, which we still don't know, that's still up in the air. You feel like McFadden and Morris could come in and play well with that offensive line, correct?
Well, McFadden did rush for over 1,000 yards 2 years ago before Dallas got Elliott, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty much an amazing stat there. Anyway, he wouldn't be Ezekiel Elliott. Then again, who would? But I think he'd be serviceable. That being said, as we keep talking about all the time, that Dallas schedule is brutal. They play a lot of top defenses this year. I don't think this is going to be a big season for Elliott, at least not as far as I know he wants to get 2,000 yards. I certainly don't see that happening this year, not with that schedule, not with how the Cowboys are lining up. It doesn't look like it's going to be a pleasant time for them.
Yeah, and let's see if I can get it here. It didn't come up, so we'll rattle it off in a minute when I find it. But I wanted to go back to the team that I kind of teased before the break. You have the Chiefs all the way down at 27. That's Spencer Ware, Sharkhandrick West, Kareem Hunt, C.J. Spiller, which, by the way, if you didn't know where C.J. Spiller was, there he goes. So Kareem Hunt is the fantasy darling right now. He's going to be drafted high in some dynasty leagues because there's an assumption, and I know Matt Modica, our former co-host, who's now still on Roto Experts during the week, he said that he expects Kareem Hunt to get the job relatively quickly. So what are your thoughts there, and why don't you expect the Chiefs to run the ball that effectively?
Well, you sort of named the problem there already. You got Ware, West, and Hunt. Good luck trying to figure out which one's going to be the breakout there. The other problem is Alex Smith. Doesn't throw the ball deep to the secondary, so that means the safety's going to play closer to the line of scrimmage, and I don't think any of these guys is a true number one running back. I think Hunt, I sort of agree with Matt. I think it will be Hunt's job eventually. I think you're going to sort of play the game of when eventually is. I don't think it'll be week one. This smells like more of a week four situation somewhere around there when they finally realize that Ware and West just aren't very special. You know, Ware was sort of replaced last year. You look at his numbers as the season rolled along, especially late. Andy Reid went away from him. He was going more towards West and doing different formations, whatever that was. West Ware seems to be best when they use him as both a pass catcher and a runner, when they split it up. But they didn't seem to know how to do that last year. You know, he had 7 catches in week 1, 129 yards, and then he never had more than 3 in any other game. But they just didn't know how to get him the ball. It was just strange how they used him. And we know as a rusher, a pure rusher, he's an average back at best. Not someone you're going to use the goal line either. So I'm not a big fan of Ware at all. West, to me, is once again, is a jag, just another guy there. Not someone I'm worried about. That's why I do think it's Hunt's job eventually. I'd feel better about Hunt if I knew it was going to be his job from week 1 on. But I don't think it's going to be. I think they're going to use sort of a mixture of all 3 guys. I think it's going to be sort of a fantasy nightmare.
I get it. Their offensive line, to give you a little bit on that. The one positive that I've noticed, George, in writing this article for the last few years, and I've said this to you before, is that continuity ends up playing a bigger role than maybe some people might suspect. You obviously want these high draft picks that turn into fantasy gold, and they're the next Jonathan Ogden. That's not always the case. But in the Chiefs' case, while nobody jumps off the page as an all-pro, they are pretty long on continuity. They have Mitch Morse there. He's a third-year center. He's their best player last year. Eric Fisher is still there at left tackle for his 5th season, and while people have bashed him over the years, he's at least a consistent cog in that offense. Then they have Duvernay Tardif, Schwartz, Parker Ehringer. 3 of these guys had 16 starts, while Duvernay Tardif had 14 and Zach Fulton had 12 as he filled in for Parker Ehringer, who was the starter last year before an injury ended his season. So there, I have him ranked 12th. I think he could push into the top 10 despite nobody really having any idea who any of these guys are. They've played together for a long time, and they've done a pretty good job protecting Alex Smith. You know, he's got some mobility. Look, as a football player, Alex Smith is pretty good. As a fantasy guy, Alex Smith is never the guy that you want. He just doesn't push the ball downfield, as he said.
He doesn't, and that brings all the safeties close to the line of scrimmage because they know he's not going to try and throw the ball over their heads. He's pretty much a check down guy. He's not going to make mistakes. Smith gets lauded because he never turns the ball over. Well, it's because he takes no chances. And in today's NFL, sure, you'll be a 500 team, maybe a little bit above. You'll keep games close, but it's tough to win like that consistently. It's also why it's hard to take the Chiefs seriously as a Super Bowl threat. In this day and age, you need to throw that ball down the field. As I say, you need to matriculate the football down the field, and he doesn't do that at all.
Yeah, after the manner in which they lost to the Steelers in the playoffs last year, I think anybody that was going to hitch their wagons to the Chiefs' Super Bowl efforts ended it right there. Unless they make some changes, like the Pat Mahomes thing a couple of years down the line, I don't think people are going to take themselves, it's going to take the Chiefs seriously to win a Super Bowl. I think they're a really good team. Andy Reid's a really good coach, but I think he's a little bit boxed in with how good this offense can be, unless this offensive line and running backs played out of their mind, and then they do like what Dallas did last year, but none of us are holding our breath waiting for that. I'll go back to the Dallas schedule for a second, George, just because you highlighted it. Here's how it starts off. Hosting the Giants. Why do the Giants have to keep going there to open up the season? Why don't they mix it up?
Why don't they stop playing each other to open up the season? I'm a little tired
ratings.
Of this. Can you mix it up a
ratings.
Little bit?
Everybody
that,
watches
that,
it.
That is why, yeah.
That's a really
right.
high-rated
I mean, come
game.
On. It's the same thing every year. Like, it would be just as high-rated in New York, though, or New Jersey, whatever you want to talk about.
You're right.
No one's going to watch the game. It's in whatever they call that, the MetLife Stadium now. Come on.
Yeah.
So I don't get it. Like I said, just for me, I like a little variety here, so I wouldn't mind it not being in Dallas every season.
Yeah. So, anyway, they host the G-Men. Then it's at Denver, at Arizona, then the Rams. So it's 4 legit defenses to open up the season. Then you got the Packers, which, you know, they got to stop somebody. Then it's at the Niners, at Washington, Chiefs, at Falcons, Eagles, Chargers, Redskins, Washington again. Yeah, they're hosting Washington. That is... Are they? Yeah, they're playing Thanksgiving, obviously. Then they play.
It's the week after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so they do the 2 Thursdays in a row again. Then it's at New York, at Oakland, Seattle, and at Philly. That is a really hard schedule right now. They just, you know, they drew the short straw on having to play the AFC West, who's improved, obviously, and you got a bunch of good defenses there and teams that can score some points. So
the first 4 weeks are death.
It's brutal.
And you're playing four of the top defenses in the league. The Giants, Denver, Arizona, Los Angeles. You can laugh about the Rams all you want. That defense is very good.
It is.
And we all know what Wade Phillips does in his first season with the new defense. He turns it around. Yeah, if they can survive that, all right, it gets a little easier as far as fantasy is concerned. Playing Green Bay is not easy, but as far as fantasy is concerned, you got Green Bay, San Fran, Washington. But then you got KC. You know, so like I said, they got to survive that first 4 weeks. Otherwise, it's going to be a little rough here. And during your fantasy playoffs, at the Giants versus Seattle. Good luck with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And at Oakland. That's tough. That's 14, 15, 16. Two road games against the Giants and the Raiders, and then the Seahawks. I mean, that's, you know, if you're not pulling a bye, you got some issues right there. So, it is tough. I mean, there isn't any doubt. You know, the AFC, the NFC East teams that are going to battle each other out, having to play the AFC West is not a picnic, and they're playing the NFC West, you know, against some NFC West matchups here that are not advantageous for Dallas. So, anyway, that's enough about the Cowboys. We'll keep talking about the running backs when we come back, because there's a couple other ones I want to mine into, namely the Patriots. As good as they are, we've never liked having their running backs, have we, George?
Bill Belichick hates fantasy.
Yeah. And then LeGarrette Blount happened last year, so screw me, I guess. I didn't know what the hell I was doing when I passed on him. So we'll be back after the break. Nice. Mixing it up here. It's really, we're all over the place with music this morning. I kind of like it. This is like a swing music. What is it? What was that name of that band? Squirrel Nut Zippers. Remember that back in the day, George? Like 20 years ago when that movie Swingers came out and they had constant swing music.
I'm sorry. What was that band name again?
It was called the Squirrel Nut Zippers. That was the name of the band. They were featured in the movie Swingers, I believe. I think. But
I think I just found your next birthday gift.
I love that movie. And then, like, there was a little bit of a swing craze. That movie popularized it, but you don't remember that 20 years ago? I don't know. I remember it. I was living in Boston.
No.
Really?
No. Squirrel Nut Zippers and what was the movie again?
Swingers. You don't know the movie Swingers? I love that movie.
That rings a bell.
Vince Vaughn, John Favreau. Rob Livingston or Ron Livingston, who's the guy from Office Space.
I've heard of Vince Vaughn. I don't know the other guys.
Ron Livingston's the guy from Office Space. Peter from Office Space.
I probably know him then.
Yeah, he's in.
I've heard of him. I'm not a Vince Vaughn guy, so I never saw it. No.
Really? Jeez, you really are old school. That's 20 years ago. I bet you came out 20 years ago this year. Maybe even 21. Swingers, love them.
I'm sure I saw movies that year. I just didn't see a Vince Vaughn movie. I'm not a big Adam Sandler guy either, or the other guy who's always in it with Vaughn.
What?
I'm sorry, it's not my type of movie.
Adam Sandler, where did he come from?
I don't know. I think I just saw him once. I think I was watching that Bob Barker thing on him and Adam Sandler, which I think is extremely funny.
Happy Gilmore?
Yes.
Yes.
But it's the one that's after, where he's Bob Barker's in the hospital room, and you know Adam Sandler comes to visit him, and they get into another fight.
Yeah.
So
anyway, I don't have a lot. I don't have another advocate here because Pete was born in like the 90s, so he hasn't seen that. So I got nothing here. I need somebody to call in or tweet at me that you are also a fan of the movie Swingers. It seems impossible to me that you don't even know the movie because I've watched it so many times.
No joke. Never seen it.
Wow.
Not going to see it. Not watching it tonight. I have introduced my daughter to Indiana Jones.
No, that's good. That's a good one.
I'm not a Vince Vaughn guy. I'm just not. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen.
All right. John Favreau directed the Iron
Man. All right,
Man
Mike,
movies.
For you tonight, I'll go on Netflix and watch it. Screw Benny Ricciardi's book. I'm not working on that. I'm going to procrastinate some more.
I'm not
I'll
suggesting
watch
you blow
tonight.
Off your professional responsibilities. I'm just saying it's a good movie. Anyway, back to running backs. First of all, do you think the Steelers should extend Le'Veon Bell?
I'm torn on this.
Me too.
Because, you know, once again, he wants a lot of money.
He wants
he'll
to be the
get it from
paid.
Somebody, so he will have to get paid.
He wants to be the highest paid
running
back, which is $8 million a year currently set by LeSean McCoy.
Oh, he wants to crush that.
Yeah.
He wants to at least get 50% more than that, if not close to double that. So he wants a lot of money. Running backs, we've seen this before. If you know, if he was somebody who had no fear problems in his past, you know, no drug suspensions or anything like that, I'd probably be more open to it. Right now, I'm sort of leaning no. But then again, I think also, Steelers, if Ben Roethlisberger is serious about retiring, you know, I mean, you only got another year or two left. Don't you want to give him the best weapons you could possibly have around him while he's still playing? You know, anyway, if I'm going to if I'm going to work this contract, there has to be something in there that protects the team if he gets suspended again, as far as that signing bonus money is back. Maybe he gets it, you know, every year rather than all at once, every year, week one, whatever it might be. You could certainly, the team can protect itself like that. That's my biggest worry there, because he is a great back, a great talent. But with his past, I got to be very careful to give him a lot of upfront money, because he does something else stupid where he gets suspended. It could be for 8 games, half a season. It wouldn't shock me. And so I'd be a little bit worried here, yes.
Look, the doubling of the salaries of McCoy, that's insane stuff. I think the only way to do it, and by the way, they only have 9 days to get this done. July 17th is the deadline. I think the only way to do it is to give him a fairly significant guarantee if they can fit it. Steelers don't have tons of cap room, but if they can fit it, give him a fairly significant guarantee, but make it one of these sort of a little nicer on the guarantee, a little lower on the annual than he would like. Team can get out of it if something crazy happens. And yes, I'm sure he'll be annoyed that they're not going to knock him over with the best. I mean, they might give him the best offer in the history of the NFL for a running back. So in that sense, he should take it and smile and be done with it. But you play at a position which is somewhat commoditized. You've also hamstrung yourself and your agent somewhat by having these issues in the past, regardless of whether they're missed tests or failed tests. You're in the program and you've gotten suspended a couple of times. I'm sorry, that hurts your value to teams. It just does. I'm a Steelers fan. I think the guy's unbelievable. I get to watch him all the time, and he's every time he gets hurt towards the end of the year, which has happened a couple of times too, it totally caps the offense out. Not that they would have beaten the Patriots, because they had the worst defensive game plan I've ever seen against them, but it obviously hurt them offensively. And I mean, I don't know what else to say, George. If they give him the best offer in the history of the NFL for a running back, that's what the best they can do, right?
It's a he deserves it. I mean, he does deserve it. He is the best running back in the NFL, in my opinion. He just has a completely different running style, and he fits that offense so well.
Yes.
But I don't know if I can give him a long term. I don't know if I can give any running back a long term deal, especially one with his history. Remember, even if you want to take up the drug suspensions, he's had injuries as well. So I'm gonna have a tough time doing it. If he wants to really, I mean, reset the running back market. You know, if he wants a $9 million a year, okay, I can live with that. But if he wants stuff to that now $12 to $15 million range and he's insistent on it, I don't know if I can do that. Maybe you could, once again, this year he's playing, maybe you franchise him next year again and you go with it around that and you can live with that. And once again, you may be thinking, well, Bell will be gone, so will Roethlisberger. You know, assuming I'm certainly sure they have an idea of Ben is if he's real about this or just being Ben. I think Ben is a guy who likes attention when he announces
drama
stuff
queen.
Like this. So, drama queen, yeah, that's really what I was going with that. So I think he is that. But the Steelers are probably have a pretty good idea that maybe he's not. Maybe he, at most we got this year and one more out of him.
I think
and maybe
that's
he's
the
saying,
most.
You know what?
I think that's the most.
Right, so we
got to
rebuild anyway. So why pay Bell long term then? I could see that being true.
Well, I wonder if they'll just you could go the other way and say, well, Ben's contract will be off the books. We'll actually be able to afford Bell, and we're not going to get some free agent quarterback on the market. We're going to have to develop somebody, whether it's Dobbs or it's not Landry Jones. It could be Josh Dobbs, but that's a mid-round pick and a project, and we'll have to figure it out. He's apparently people rave about how smart he is, but let's be honest. He's not Ben Roethlisberger, and it would take a while for anybody to be convinced that he could be even in the same building as Roethlisberger. So that being said,
Speaking of quarterbacks, Mike, did you hear now where Sam Darnold may not come out next year?
Yes, I did hear that.
That pretty much says, I don't want to play for the Jets.
It does. You know, we'll see when the money is on the line if he can make that decision. Andrew Luck made that decision.
Exactly.
Matt Barkley made that decision. Matt Leinart made that decision. There are some guys that did come back. Peyton Manning, frankly, made that decision 20 years ago. So there are guys that have made the decision. It's worked out in both ways. He has legitimate experience from his school. I'm sure he can get on the phone and talk with any of those guys, whether they think it was a good thing or a bad thing. Leinart came back. His career in the NFL wasn't what it was. So I'm sure he treasures the fact that he came back for his senior season on some level, despite losing to, I believe it was Vince Young. He lost to in his last game. So
it's a gamble.
It is a gamble.
I think you got to come out, man. Once again, we're seeing these college hits. I know it's more, with Jalen Smith. How much money did he lose because he got hurt in that bowl game? I think two things we're going to see for more is more guys coming out early because they want to get that big NFL contract up front. I think as far as college is concerned, we're going to see more and more of these players not playing these bowl games.
Yeah.
Their future is already set. I understand you want to win that bowl game. It's great on the resume, you get the trophy and all that. But is it worth risking your future earnings for?
I heard a lot of people saying that it wouldn't be dramatic. I disagree, and I'm with you. I think that it will be more dramatic with guys like Fournette and Peppers and other players sitting out as they stare down these first round contracts, which are, have a pretty significant guarantee compared to what Jalen Smith got by dropping to the second round. And frankly, if the Cowboys didn't take him there, he might have dropped even further. So I'm with you on that. I do think that will continue to happen. Anyway, to put it back on the tracks, I do think this is all good discussion. No, the one upside for the Jets is that there are several guys, while Darnold may be the number one ranked guy, there are several guys that could be considered franchise quarterbacks, whether it's Josh Allen from Wyoming or Mason Rudolph from Oklahoma State or Lamar Jackson from Louisville and other names. I do think there's an opportunity for there to be multiple franchise quarterbacks in this upcoming draft. So whether even if it's not Darnold. So since we only got 2 minutes, let's just do the Patriots here. We got Mike Gillislee in the mix. They picked up Rex Burkhead. Both of those guys were favored quite well in some advanced analytics regarding running backs. So with it being a whole bunch of guys, how do you expect this to emerge? Do you expect it to be one guy or everybody's getting 10 touches a game?
Oh, I think it's going to be game plan specific, week in and week out. Belichick, he sort of gave us a break last year because he had Blunt, so he had the battering ram. Deion Lewis was hurt, so it was James and it was White. So it was White and Blunt, pretty much. That was the running game there. This year, he's gone back to the Belichick of old. He's got four choices. Good luck trying to figure everything out. Who's going to be the goal line guy? We sort of assume it's going to be Gillislee. So if I had to choose out of this mess, Gillislee's the guy I want, but I have no problem letting anybody else take a shot at it. They want to go at him early, good luck to you. I'm not playing the Bill Belichick guessing game. He does hate running backs, absolutely hates running backs, so I'm gonna stay away from this. But like I said, if I had to choose, if Gillislee's staring at me, and let's say on a round 8-ish or so, and I'm weak at running back, I want to take a shot, it's Gillislee first.
So the problem here is, as fantasy analysts, we don't like to use this word, but this is a guess. You're going to be guessing if you're picking a Patriots running back.
Educated guess.
Yeah. So it's all about where you're going to pick these guys. I wouldn't reach for any of them. As James White should have been the Super Bowl MVP. Barely used him in the red zone last year. So we'll come back to close out the show and hand it over to Joe Lisi and Rich Germanello. It's Mike Blute and George Kurtz on the Roto Experts in the Morning. We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, closing out the show. We're going to hand it off to Joe Lisi and Rich Germanello after this for College Football Today. Excited to have them back in the mix. I'm a big college football fan as well, so they'll be giving you season previews. Joe just gave me a nice little quick season preview of my team, Boston College, see what they got going on. He expects like a 500 season, which is about what I expect, but always giving insight on teams like that and all the other 130 teams in the college football FBS division. So, George, we talked a little bit about the Pats. The one team I heard the guys talking about the other day, too, and Scott Engel, who gives great insight on this because he has written for Seahawks.com for a number of years, is that very team. He expects Eddie Lacy will actually have a chance to win this job, and he thinks Rawls is going to be kind of the odd man out as Procise becomes a nice change of pace back. that makes sense on paper, but I have no faith in Eddie Lacy. And I remember there was a point last year when you're trying to stream running backs, all those guys go down, and I thought I had my answer in C.J. Procise. He played well, and he goes down with an injury. So how do you expect this running back core to pan out?
I think everything you just said is correct, both Scott and you. I do expect them to be Eddie Lacy, of Procise being the change of back guy, roles to be phased out. And I agree with you. I don't trust Eddie Lacy whatsoever. Odds are, not drafting on Monday. You know, in those drafts, I don't trust him. I get worried about Mike, about any player who needs a weight clause.
We've seen totally
him before.
Agree.
He's been eating himself out of his league for a while, and maybe this is the year he figures it out, maybe not. And let's remember, that Seattle offensive line, not all that good. So I'm going to have a hard time, really hard time, trusting Eddie Lacy.
I mean, my thought process is he had the job in Green Bay, and he ate himself out of it. So maybe his agent is in his ear and saying, listen, dude, this is your last shot. And if you pull off a 1,000-yard season, you know, it's going to set you up potentially longer term. I actually don't remember the details of Lacy's contract. And to your point, this offensive line is a mess, too. I have them ranked 30th. They added Luke Jokel and Odey Abushi as their tackles. Anybody have any confidence in those guys? The Jaguars didn't. The Texans didn't. The Jets didn't, which is the three teams that let those guys go. So, you know, I just have a hard time putting a lot of faith into it, but I really do like Procise, and I just think in PPR leagues he could play a more interesting role.
Yeah, Procise, I think it's interesting. I think this thing would have been okay with Rawls and Procise, actually. I don't think they needed to sign any Lacy, even though they got a pretty good deal out of it. I mean, listen, maybe Lacy takes it seriously. You know, Seattle is a good team. You know, with that offensive line makes it work. He's going to have to be his own blocker a lot of times. And he's had injuries the past couple of seasons as well. I think they'd have been fine with Rawls playing the first, second down Procise, still being the third down guy with some a smattering of touches or second down throughout the game. I think they'd have been okay that way. But this day and age, you want as many running backs as possible, so I don't blame Seattle either. So bottom line is, Lacy, running back two, Procise, more of a flex guy for me. Rawls is somebody, waiver wire, extra bench for me.
Good stuff today, George. There was a lot to go through. Tons of action in MLB last night, obviously, and we had a lot of runs scored, and we're ramping up. We're getting excited. George and I do have three drafts on Monday. We'll talk a lot more football tomorrow. The first hour tomorrow will be football from 8 to 9, and then from 9 to 10 we'll talk baseball. We'll give our all-star apologies, whether it's Zach Greinke or our esteemed colleague Mike Cardano. We're going to have Roger Mooney on from the Tampa Bay Times. He covers the Rays, backup writer for the Tampa Bay Times. So that's it for today. Foo Fighters playing you out. Thanks to Pete Considore, Joe Lisi, and Rich Giminello are next on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.